And as Mr. Paris gets set up, just a reminder, we will have a public comment shortly, right after Mr. Paris's presentation. Sorry, go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, council members. Jonathan Paros on council staff. I have an update on the council's holistic strategic plan. So we'll get right into it. The focus of today's report is an update on a draft implementation charter that really focuses on taking the what of the strategic plan and focusing on the how and the who of how that gets done going into the future. There is no action required by the council today, but we are seeking comment on that draft implementation charter. The council had a lot of materials presented to you at the April council meeting when we brought forward the draft strategic plan and report. And so if there's any lingering thoughts or comments that folks want to make, we'd be happy to hear them today. So the council spent the better part of a calendar year working on the development of a draft strategic plan that was presented at the April council meeting. We had a workshop in Boston, Massachusetts, and then we spent a good part of the beginning of this calendar year working on vision, mission, strategic goals, strategies and objectives for the strategic plan. What is next is a real focus on the who and the how are we going to work on this going forward, so the implementation charter, but also the identification of key performance indicators that really bring together the goals, strategies, objectives with projects and programs that the council has underway. The other big piece that we're going to focus on is alignment between the strategic plan and the priority setting process. And I think this is something that will be a real focus in the coming months in thinking about some substantive changes to the priority setting process relative to the new strategic plan. So what to expect at your next council meeting? I think the council has done a really nice job articulating its vision, mission, and goals in the strategic plan already. We have the draft implementation charter draft ready today for review. Between now and then, as I already mentioned, we'll be focused on the development of these KPIs, the key performance indicators, aligning them with strategies and objectives that you've already seen, and then defining that how the process links up with priority setting. So 2, 3, and 4, I think, will really be the bulk of the work over the summer. The council has already, I think, largely handled number 1 on this list. So what is the implementation charter? We want a structured way to go through and operationalize the holistic strategic plan. And again, it's this bridge between the what and the execution of the how, and I would add the who. It's about process. It's about how the council as an organization can be effective in its mission. It's not about the line items of overall priorities. But we want to think about how the two can come together, and that's the work over the summer. The implementation charter is laid out in 4 parts. We have these guiding principles that we've actually lifted from your strategic plan. Roles and accountability, which I want to review with the council today, what the council's role here is, the role of the executive committee, the executive director, and then talk about the approach and the reporting. So how often you might hear about this and how we want to keep the council updated on how things are going. So we'll start with the draft principles. And as I mentioned, these principles come from the holistic strategic plan. We had some, I think, important feedback from the executive committee earlier this month. So thanks to Ms. Griffin for pointing these out and sharing some ideas. So I'll go through these. I think they're important. The first is organizational excellence. And so in striving for that, council actions and workload should really reflect the available staff time, staff resources, the council's resources, and partner capacity. The work should be representative. So here we're supporting long-term viability of the entire New England fleet, and we want the public to be engaged early and often throughout the council process. Stewardship, so in operationalizing ecosystem approaches to fishery management. We want implementation to proceed incrementally. It's not going to happen all in one day, but there really needs to be a focus on what is achievable in the short term, but also a longer term vision for where the council heads. Adaptability, so in pursuing that, approaches need to be adjusted based on experience and feedback and changing conditions. This isn't a static thing. We really want the council to shape and guide the work overall. And in trust, really engage in building that trust. Progress, constraints, and trade-offs, they get communicated early and often and directly to the council. So switching over to roles and accountability, we'll focus here in with the box on the left-hand side of the screen. So the council in this draft, it has been identified to set the strategic direction and be a steward of the mission and vision. The executive committee has a role in providing strategic oversight, so I think more frequent check-ins on how things are going and how work is happening against the priorities and the strategic plan overall. It would review progress and advise on adjustments. Dr. O'Keefe, as executive director, would be the sponsor of the implementation, so should be looking to confirm the priorities, the sequencing, the pacing of work, understanding what staff capacity is, and making sure that the work aligns with that. On staff, there would be different responsibilities, I think, at the plan team level, certainly working with committees to develop those key performance indicators and to work on tracking, and then an overall tracking process that would be bringing forward at executive committee meetings and to the council overall. So the plan this summer is to engage with the executive committee to review the development of key performance indicators relative to strategies and objectives. That was number two on that list a little earlier on. We're looking for feedback on integration between the holistic strategic plan and the priority setting process. And then to bring together outcomes from that meeting to the public meeting of the executive committee on September 1st, so that there would be an opportunity for the full council to kind of get a sense and flavor of where this heads prior to your meeting in September, when we'll ask you to approve the strategic plan and overall. So last slide here, what does this all look like? We've built this pyramid to sort of talk about what is aspirational, achievable, and specific and tangible about the strategic plan, identify what has already been done and where we need to head. And so really the focus in the coming months will be around objectives and strategies, using this implementation charter, putting together an action plan, and being ready to communicate out in September. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Peros. To the council on the holistic strategic plan and where we move forward with it. Thank you, John.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I strongly support moving this forward. Council never has a shortage of good ideas. And I think that the charter should give the executive director and the staff the ability to clearly tell the council what can be done and what cannot be done and what trade-offs we're making. And I think if we do that, that this plan can actually become a new and more efficient operating system for the council. So I strongly support what's laid out.
Thank you for that. Any further comments? Okay, well, that concludes the holistic strategic plan. As Mr. Paris pointed out, the XCOM will be meeting this summer to kind of finalize something, and we will have something back to you in September. And, we'll move forward from there. Thank you very much. Up next is our open public comment period. I have five names, I believe four in the room and one online, and I will go through the list that I have. Dr. Quinn.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. John Quinn, Fishery Survival Fund. And this is a scallop-related issue, but it more is across the entire council. What prompted me to discuss this was you have in your package a correspondence from a scallop boat owner who listened in to the last couple of AP and committee meetings. I first want to say at the front, the issue is the disproportionate amount of time spent on the NGOM issues rather than the limited access scallop issues. I first want to say up front that, as Vincent Belzano just reminded me, I voted for Amendment 21. I support everybody's rights to fish. I understand that families are impacted up there, and I'm not trying to interfere with that. But at the same time, I understand that the limited access fleet catches 95% of the scallops. The vast majority of them do nothing else rather than scallop. They don't have lobster permits. They don't have menhaden permits. They don't do RSA up in the Gulf of Maine. That's their livelihood, the limited access. So it's important that the focus, at least in my opinion, is on the 95% share of the landings. I was at the meeting. I know Mr. Smolowitz said the same thing. There's somehow you got to change the amount of time that's being spent on this. I would say approximately half of these meetings are now working on less than 5% of the landings. People are advocates for the area. I appreciate that. But you really got to address this. We hear the word streamlining and efficiency all through the council. You've done great work streamlining and making more efficient the process. And I congratulate for that. But this is one area I think you got to look at very, very closely. The gentleman that wrote in the letter probably described it far better than I could. But maybe you just reorder the issues on the agenda and you do all limited access stuff up front. And then you get to the Northern Gulf of Maine. That's one issue. I will call the second proposal. This is an inefficient one, but I was talking to a gentleman named John Papalotto this afternoon. And under his administration, they had two APs, the NGOM GenCAD AP and the Limited Access AP. They could both have at it as much as they wanted in those APs, and then the committee could be the final arbiter of the information coming out of those two. That would actually be consistent with one of the strategic plan bullets, which is to increase participation in the council process. That would open up some more AP seats on both the NGOM, GenCAT side, as well as the limited access side. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think that's, you know, something you should think. So, in short, I support everybody's rights to fish up there. I support Amendment 21, but there's got to be a reordering of the amount of time that's being spent on these issues, because it's being disproportionately spent on 5%, less than 5% of the landings. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Quinn. Dr. O'Keefe?
Thank you. Thank you for the comments. I just wanted to follow up on the staff perspective. There certainly has not been any staff intent to prioritize one issue over the other, but we have received the comments. I appreciate the comment today. And in terms of setting agendas, this is certainly something that we can look at. And when we do our agenda setting, that's a staff-related issue related to prioritizing Northern Gulf of Maine in the context of the overall scallop fishery and resource. That would be the council's purview in December. But certainly we will follow up on the staff side of things. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Up next, I have Bruce Kinseth. Could you please turn on the mic, push the button in front? There you go.
Ah, okay. That better? My name is Bruce Kinseth, and I live in Point Judith, Rhode Island. Around 1980, the Atlantic herring population collapsed. In the 1990s, the cod population and capelin populations also collapsed, and menhaden disappeared from the Gulf of Maine. Along the way, the river herring and mackerel populations collapsed. In a recent stock assessment, it was found that cod are low in weight and length of age, have low fecundity, and low recruitment. In addition, the population has become truncated with less older fish. On top of that, cod are affected by climate change, which raises their metabolism. This sounds like a hopeless case. MSA requires that the best available science be used. Biology is a science and is being totally ignored. There's one biological factor that ties all of the things that I mentioned above together. Low weight at age and length at age is obviously poor nutrition. So let's look at the food supply. Atlantic herring, river herring, capelin, mackerel, and menhaden are much more than just bait fish. They have one thing in common. They are high in lipids, which are fats and oils, which makes them very nutritious. They have about twice as many calories per pound than the other available forage. And without them, the forage is basically junk food. In one study done in 1965, found that a large cod's diet could contain as much as 70% Atlantic herring. In addition to improving the growth rate of cod, an abundance of high-calorie food will increase the number of eggs laid per fish and per pound of the fish's weight. The eggs will be larger and contain more lipids, leading to healthier larvae and juveniles with a greater chance of surviving to adulthood. The increased metabolism form from warmer waters increases the fish's need for more food. So an abundance of nutrients will also make the fish more able to tolerate that. Finally, spawning takes a lot of energy, and they need high-energy calorie fish. The current lack of high-calorie forage makes it difficult for the fish to survive and leads to the decrease of older fish. This is important because older fish can lay 6 million to 9 million eggs per year. I propose that we set a goal for the next 50 years to rebuild the Atlantic fishery to its full potential, and we really don't know how great that could be. The first step towards that goal is a suggestion that was submitted by Paul Eidman to set the menhaden tack at 75,000 metric tons with 100% allocated to the bait fishery and ban harvesting of menhaden for reduction purposes. Menhaden are the only species of the five that has a viable population that can serve as the foundation to lead the rebuilding of the fishery. Hopefully this can be adopted at this fall's ASMFC Menhaden Board meeting. More information is available in comments that I submitted, as well as on my website, nraf2076.org. That's 2076. In my submitted comments, it says 7076, which is a typo. And I really like your comments. My email is in the comments that I submitted. And I've contacted about 10 different fisheries biologists and stuff like that to try to get more information and what they think of these ideas. And I haven't got any comments back. Surprising. So I would love comments. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Up next, Ryan Mulvey.
Good afternoon, Attorney Ryan Mulvey, Senior Counsel at Cause of Action Institute. I represent the fishermen in the Loper Bright litigation. I want to thank the council in advance, firstly, for its careful consideration of the written comment Cause of Action submitted jointly with NCLA on the potential rescission of the IFM program in the herring fishery. I just wanted to provide three responses in light of the conversation yesterday about potential action by the council. First, I want to very strongly underscore that the IFM program in the herring fishery, if it were actually implemented — it's been 6 years, it still hasn't happened — but if it were, the economic impact on fishermen would be much more adverse than originally estimated. The economy generally and the fishery are in a very different place than they were when the Omnibus Amendment was being developed. And as we heard in the Science Center report yesterday, at least in the groundfish sector ASM program, monitoring costs are exorbitant. Now, granted, that's a different fishery, different coverage rate, but the point remains that data is informative, and scant attention has really been given to whether the costs of monitoring justify the limited gains that will come, particularly because in herring, SBRM rates are low. It's a clean fishery. It's not clear to us why monitoring is even needed. Second, to allay concerns that were voiced yesterday and also in the executive committee meeting earlier this month, rescission of the herring program or even the omnibus amendment as a whole would have no bearing on the scallop program or the sector program, monitoring program in groundfish, We've stipulated in the Loper, Bright, and Relentless cases that the scallop fishery is a lawful program, and at least with groundfish, the statute of repose for bringing any challenges has elapsed. So until the council takes further action to modify that program, there would be no impact there. Finally, my third point, I just want to comment on timing. I'm deeply concerned by the lack of apparent alacrity in taking an action that the council exhibited yesterday. Waiting until December even to consider adding this as an action for 2027, I think is inconsistent with the executive order 14276, which directs the council to prioritize deregulatory actions. It's been 9 months since the work plan was supposed to be finalized. It shouldn't take another six to get the ball rolling. And it behooves the council to move a little more quickly if it wants to be part of the rescission process, lest it risk direct secretarial action with no council involvement. And I think also the fact that under revised NEPA regulations at NOAA, the new categorical exclusion A1, there would be no NEPA analysis even needed for rescission of the herring program. Thank you again for your consideration of our comments.
Thank you, Attorney Mulvey. Up next, I have John Vecchione.
My name was beautifully pronounced, Chairman Salerno. I am John Vecchione. I was counsel of record in the Supreme Court in Relentless v. Commerce, and I represent the Relentless plaintiffs as well as the New Civil Liberties Alliance. I thank everyone for allowing these comments and for consideration of those that Mr. Mulvey and I put before you. I just want to make further comments on whether the omnibus should also be withdrawn. And I want to note that, again, this doesn't affect scallops. I've been at this meeting for 2 days, and I've heard a lot about scallops, and I have seen in the press that sometimes they think that these cases have something to do with it, and they don't. So I did want to reiterate that. I also was involved in the Gaethel case long ago with groundfish, and I just want to point out that under all of these monitoring programs that came out under the omnibus, they really haven't gained the council anything, because the herring regulations have never gone into effect. There's never been any more monitoring because of them. And the reason the omnibus should come out is that it sort of sits like an invitation to further litigation anytime another industry-funded monitoring program arises under it. And yet it is not doing the council or the fishermen any good, because you're not getting anything extra out of it. So it does strike us that the EO in that has sort of triggered all of this is directs you to get rid of, I'll call them, useless regulations, and the omnibus has not produced the effects it was supposed to have. It has rather brought litigation that has not helped the New England fishery or anybody else. So I would urge that the omnibus itself also be withdrawn, and our written comments more extensively explain why. But I thank the council, and I also, this is my first one of these gatherings, and it's been very insightful, and I thank you all for letting me be here.
Thank you, Attorney Vecchione. Up next, I have online Deidre Bulkey. Deidre, if you could raise your hand so we can get you up on the list. Whenever you're ready, Deidre.
Hear me okay?
Sure can.
Great. Good afternoon. My name is Deirdre Bulkey. I'm an independent consultant supporting engagement activities related to the development of the Regional Fisheries Compensation Program for Atlantic Offshore Wind, also known as the Regional Fund Administrator, or RFA. The council has received periodic updates on this effort, most recently at the September meeting in Gloucester, where my colleague Laura Singer gave brief comments. Today, I will summarize where the project stands and what to expect over the coming months. A memo from the RFA was included in your meeting package under the Habitat tab, document 6A, I believe, additional correspondence. So for those who may be less familiar, the RFA is a third-party administrator that was selected to develop a regional claims framework for managing and distributing fisheries compensation funds associated with offshore wind development. 11 states from Maine through North Carolina are participating in this collaborative work. The effort is being led by Brown Greer, a Virginia-based complex claims resolution firm, as well as Carbon Trust, a global not-for-dividend consultancy. They are being guided by input from a Design Oversight Committee, or DOC, which is made up of commercial fishermen, fishing representatives, developers, and state employees, and four higher recreational fishermen and relevant federal employees also advise the effort. The project has been underway for about a year and a half, and much of the first year really focused on listening and learning, gathering input from stakeholders and evaluating other compensation programs. And more recently, the Design Oversight Committee in particular has been working through all the details of what a draft framework could look like for the region, testing different approaches, discussing and identifying areas of agreement, as well as topics that require additional discussion. So as we move into the final phase of this project, public engagement will become increasingly important. Just wanted to let you know that over the summer, the team expects to release a draft compensation framework for public review and comment. I would encourage anyone interested in this project timeline and upcoming engagement opportunities to take a look at the figure that's included in the RFA memo or document 6A. It summarizes the engagement that's planned over the coming months, including several public webinars, a presentation at both the upcoming ASMFC, as well as the Mid-Atlantic Council meeting in August, and a formal public comment period is anticipated to begin later in the summer. So the final dates are not set yet, but there will be multiple opportunities to review the draft, ask questions, and provide feedback before it's finalized. I would just like to thank many council members, stakeholders, and especially the Design Oversight Committee members who've dedicated significant time and expertise on this effort over the last year and a half. We will continue to coordinate with council staff to share updates as these webinar dates are finalized, as well as additional materials available online. So for more information, please visit rfainfo.com. Definitely reach out to me directly or any other members of the RFA team or DOC members that you may know as well. If you have questions or want to learn more about this process, we're definitely here. So thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Thank you for that, Ms. Bulkey. That is the list that I have in front of me. I will go out to the audience. Ms. Brady.
Hi, Bonnie Brady, New England Fishermen's Stewardship Association. I am a member of the Fisheries DOC as an alternate. I spoke briefly at the Mid-Atlantic Council regarding this process, and at the time I said that everyone that's in the fishing industry and or any estate representative needs to pay a lot of attention to what's going on. As a fisheries group, we have had some real issues with what is happening. Now, what I said at the Mid-Atlantic that was correct is I thought there were six stakeholders that were voting from developers, six from the states, and six from the fisheries. I was corrected at the Mid-Atlantic. There's only three voting members of the state group. Three, they represent different regions, three members of developers, and six members of fishermen. However, I checked with CBI, who's part of the process, and if a majority of two of the other sectors votes for to move this forward, that will happen. It will become basically three separate groups. There's a huge amount of difference in what the fishermen want to see as the basis of compensation. Everyone that is involved, please, please get involved in the process. The Carbon Trust, for those of you that know, is from England, and they are all about offshore wind. It's a real issue. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments, Ms. Brady. Any further public comment in the room or online? Thank you very much for that, for all that did provide public comment. We will be breaking for lunch. Let's be back here at 1:30 for our lovely groundfish report. Thank you very much.